Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Hello, Wisconsin, and welcome to another program. I'd like to bring in Dan Williams also. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Well, good morning, Joe. I'm doing fine. Beautiful, nice day in Door County.
It is. You know, I yesterday, now I know today up by me near Minneapolis, it's going to be a little sticky and warm, but yesterday was a little bit of a touch of the fall feeling. And I would imagine over in Door County where you are, that, of course, is always a popular time. And so I'm sure we can look forward to some fall colors here pretty soon. I hate to say that, but that also means football season is around the corner, too.
Well, that's football season, that's the good news. The fall colors, that's the bad news. That means we're getting close to the end of summer. And, yeah, we are starting to see a few trees turn over here. So just a matter of time. Fall is such a short season. So.
That's right. That's right. Well, welcome to another broadcast here for EMS Live in Wisconsin. Dan, of course, is with me. Patrick Ryan, our president for the PAW Association, will be joining us hopefully here a little bit later in the program. The program is going to last about 30 minutes. Patrick is on a call with MTM, the state's Medicaid broker, and we hope to have some current information from Patrick as we're trying to make some things happen with that organization in paying of Medicaid ambulance transport bills. Unfortunately, there's been some time delays for those that are in that arena. Today's program is dedicated to discussing advanced certification and training for critical care paramedics. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Tyler Cristofoli and Sam Ireland. Both of them are with LifeStar EMS in West Bend. But before we get to Tyler and Sam, I wanted to offer some time here to Dan to update us on the Paramedic System of Wisconsin Conference. Dan, I know you recently put out the agenda, which looks awesome. Can you give us some more details?
Sure. Just, again, another shameless reminder that the PSOW conference is September 14th, 15th, and 16th. So we just urge people to try to attend if they can. You know, we believe that it's one of the premier conferences in the state, you know, specifically directed to EMS administrators. So we think we have a lot of pertinent information for them. Yeah, the agenda was rather tough, actually, this year to put together, not from a standpoint of lack of topics. We had almost too many topics. There's a lot of stuff going on in EMS in Wisconsin. We have the Ledge Council. We have a lot of legal things that people need to start paying closer attention to because years ago there weren't HIPAA police, there weren't compliance police, things like that. Well, they are there now, and we need to make sure that we're making sure everybody understands that and they're protecting themselves. So we hope to cover all that stuff and a lot more on our agenda. You know, we have the ever-popular, you know, service intros, and that's where everybody introduces themselves as well as what's going on in their service, and that really sets the stage for a lot of networking throughout the rest of the conference, because you hear something that somebody's doing or you want to do, you can seek those people out and go ahead and have some conversation with them and hopefully help you not have to do all of the stumbling that the first group may have done. But so, yeah, we're happy. We're getting excited about it. It's only a few weeks away, so look forward to seeing a lot of people there.
All right, Dan. Thank you to you and Cal and others for organizing that also. It's always a great event. It is in Green Bay at Tundra Lodge, September 14, 15, and 16. As Dan mentioned, the agenda was just published. If you'd like more information on the Paramedic System of Wisconsin Conference, the website is psow.org. Again, that's psow.org. The program today, again, will last about 25 to 30 minutes. It's sponsored today by Jefferson Fire and Safety, Godfrey & Kahn, attorney law firm in Milwaukee and Madison, and also a Lad Tech. This is EMS in Wisconsin. Our program continues with Tyler and Sam from West Bend with LifeStar EMS after these brief messages.
This program is sponsored by Jefferson Fire and Safety, providing high-quality equipment and service to fire, EMS, and police agencies from across Wisconsin, and manufacturer's representative for Lifeline Ambulances. Find them on the web at jeffersonfire.com. Godfrey & Kahn, a Wisconsin-based law firm, combines specific experience in numerous practice areas to provide a wide range of legal and business counseling services. The law firm is known for its core business practice and litigation, as well as providing strategic legal advice to the healthcare industry and employers. Their clients range from individuals and small businesses to government entities and large private and public national and international companies. Have a legal question? Contact attorney Thomas Shorter at Godfrey & Kahn, 877-455-2900, or find them on the web at www.gklaw.com.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli with Dan Williams today. It's good to have you with us. Our conversation regards critical care paramedic. If you're not aware of this, I'd like to just point it out. Critical care paramedic level came to life at the stroke of midnight back on January 1, 2013. Back then, 44 ambulance services made the move to CCP, while 25 kept their paramedic designation and simply added additional medication. You know, advancing to CCP is a good thing for Wisconsin and the communities they serve, patients and hospitals. These ambulance services not only provide interfacility transportation, but their medics keep their skills, of course, sharp on 911 calls. While most things we do in EMS is a continuum of learning and change, CCP is no different. We always need to be in education mode, I guess I would say, as care practitioners, providers, and also discussing the benefits of CCP with hospitals and, of course, the community. I'd like to bring into the streamed live podcast right now Tyler Cristofoli and Sam Ireland. Both are with Lifestar EMS in West Bend. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Joe. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. Tyler?
Hey, Joe. How's it going, man? Thanks for having us on today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. We know you were on with us a few months back, and I have to say the audience found your information extremely helpful. I know you reached out to us about some great things that you're doing over at Lifestar EMS in West Bend, specifically with education and training and advancing things with it. And so we appreciate you being on the program today. I know there's some things that you wanted to cover. So why don't we just start out by discussing your current goals in regards to critical care paramedic, and we'll just go from there. And if our listening audience has a question, they can always press number 1 on their keypad, and we'll be happy to bring them into the call. So what are some of the current goals that you have at West Bend with critical care paramedic?
So right now, we just wanted to bring it to light, to bring to people's attention some really great certifications that people might really not even have on their radar, I guess, as far as classes or certifications that they want to take. So what I mentioned today, I mean, any CC provider might even decide to make as a goal for themselves. When we look at, like, helicopter EMS agencies, for example, they've been requiring the flight paramedic certification, or, you know, the FPC, for their paramedics for a long time, along with stuff like neonatal resuscitation program or even advanced life support audits. And so, obviously, in addition to their other stuff that they do, and most of us do, you know, ACLS and PALS and CPR and all those letters, right? But on the ground, we kind of tend to overlook these types of certifications. And I really think that's because, in general, there's not a lot of jobs here on the ground that require these types of certifications. Most critical jobs just require the regular state license, so the critical care endorsement, along with the ACLS and then CPR, and then some providers or employers might require you to have PALS as well. And this can be a problem because some paramedics might think that just because they don't work for a helicopter EMS agency that there isn't really any reason to obtain advanced certifications. And the problem with that kind of mentality is that ground units run the exact same kind of calls that HEMS agencies do, right? Every single day, you know, all across our state, all across, you know, any state that you can imagine, critical care paramedics on the ground take very sick, very unstable patients that, you know, a lot of people would consider the type of patient that a flight agency would normally take, right? But the ground units do it day in and day out, just like all the HEMS agencies. So, but we kind of have this mentality that we don't stop and think that there are some advanced certifications that could be really useful for ground transport. Going back to that flight paramedic certification, they get that because obviously it has to do with CAMES certification, which if people aren't familiar, the Commission on Accreditation of Medical Transport Systems has to do with, you know, gas laws at altitude and things that are like really applicable to the air transport environment. So that FTC exam also has a lot of other stuff on it too that would be really applicable to us on the ground. So things like acid base imbalances, you could think about vent management, trauma management, shock management, toxicology, neonates, peds, you know, all kinds of things that we see on the ambulance. Obviously, it's not just not just happening in the skies, right? So the FPC test is put on by this organization called the BCC-TPC, which is the Board for Critical Care Transport Paramedic Certifications, and it's a really great organization. And they have this certification that I'm surprised that not more people have heard of, which is the CCPC, which is the Critical Care Paramedic Certification. So it's kind of like that flight paramedic certification that I mentioned, or if more people are familiar with the CFRN, the Certified Flight Registered Nurse, but it's for ground transport. And it's got less of a focus on CAMES and gas laws, and it's got more of a medical focus on like things like neonates and peds and things that you'd see on longer transports. And so we think that these advanced certifications are a real great goal to reach after you get your critical care license. The UMBC course, you know, whatever you took, a UMBC course, a state course, maybe a course was even put on by your service provider. They're all really meant to be intro courses to critical care. And that's not putting down those courses or anything like that. That's just how they're designed. Even the UMBC curriculum will tell you that it's an intro course to critical care. There's no way that you can learn everything there is to know about critical care in just a few weeks and then one exam. You know, it's really impossible. So the responsibility for getting CC paramedics ready to take these involved calls really, first of all, rests on the paramedic themselves and then on the agency that they work for. So there needs to be training available for them to help these practitioners kind of transition into that new role and help them be successful. But taking classes like neonatal resuscitation, advanced trauma life support audit will keep people kind of on the path to bettering themselves so that they don't get stuck in a slump. There's definitely a sense that once you've reached that CC level, that you're kind of like this top of the EMS food chain when you get that license, but really it's just the beginning. So if, you know, striving to reach these certifications really help people keep that spirit of learning alive, and they help them, you know, when they study for that. There are some classes you can take to prep for the FPC and CCPC, but most people tend to just do self-study a lot of times. There's a really great books that I'll kind of plug real quick. One is called Back to Basics, and the other one is called ASAT, A-C-E space S-A-T, and both of those books are really good for test prep. But I think that EMS could really take some lessons on the ground from the HEMS agencies in what certifications that they require, because we all really care for the same sick patients, so we should all really train to the same level. If anybody wants to know more about those advanced certifications, they can check them out at the BCC-TPC website, which is just bcctpc.org. So if anybody listening has somebody working for them, or if you work with anybody who has completed either their FPC or CCPC, they should really congratulate them, because it's a tough exam and it takes a lot of self-study, and they deserve some praise.
Sam, in working with this product and with this accreditation or certification, I should say, how many people have you had go through this training at LifeStar EMS?
So we've only had a couple so far. We actually just kind of introduced this to our providers over the last several months. So Tyler and I have both taken it now, and we're helping more people to kind of prep for these exams, and we're working on helping them to reach another level, so our regular critical care provider, and then really making a separate level for people who would obtain the same certifications as a flight paramedic.
Very good. Tyler, what would you like to share about this?
No, you know what? I think Sam's done a great job with this, and he's really, you know, like you said, you kind of meet the status quo once you reach that critical care level, and you think, all right, you know, I guess, you know, there's nowhere else to go. And most of the time we see good paramedics going to nursing school because we got this drive as paramedics or critical care providers to want the next best thing. And I know when I heard that this test had a 20% pass rate and it was very difficult, that immediately appealed to me. Like, okay, that's something I can work towards. And I think that it was a great step because I thought I knew a lot of stuff. I thought I had obtained a lot of information within my critical care program. And it was a rude awakening when I started studying for this test. And, you know, like Sam said, there is a lot of gas laws. There is some things that apply to flight physiology. But when you look in the context, sometimes they apply to our ground transports as well. So I thought it was fascinating. And the knowledge that you can self-study before you take this test. And it was very, let's just say I never want to have to take that test again. Me and Sam were both talking and we're like, all right, if we ever say we're going to let our FPC lapse, you know, just like shoot me because I never want to take that test again. But, you know, in addition to this advanced certification, you know, I think what me and Sam and, you know, some of the other guys here at LifeStar and our training staff have tried to do is cultivate this, like, self-feeding atmosphere. And our director of operations kind of calls it self-feeding, and I think that that's kind of a great term for it. And it's that whole give a man a fish versus the teach a man to fish theory. So our goal, as soon as somebody comes on or as soon as we onboard a new provider, whatever that level be, our goal is to teach them how to self-feed themselves. And we introduce them to some very valuable resources. And I think last time we talked about free open access medical education and some of the educational podcasts out there, MCRIT, Dr. Smith's EKG blog, Life in the Fast Lane. There's so many out there that we can benefit from. And if you're not using these resources, you're doing yourself a disservice. You've got to get online. Even Twitter has so many doctors and surgeons constantly putting up new studies, new findings that they have. And I think if we can teach people to kind of dial into that, yes, it's going to fall on the training officer to make sure that your crews are being adequately trained, but a huge portion of that responsibility is ours as a provider. And one of the recent things that we've looked into is something called stress inoculation training. Are you familiar with that, Joe? Have you ever heard of stress inoculation?
No, I'm not. I'm not familiar with that.
This is kind of originated in the military and in some of the special services, but the whole purpose of that is to change the way providers interpret situations and help them arrange them in a way that seems easier to handle. And I'll give you a quick example. So me and Sam had noticed that some of our providers were taking an extended amount of time in that transferring process on a critical care call. So you show up to a call, and you got a patient that's got, you know, Levofed, Vanco, fentanyl, saline, propofol. They're on a vent. They have an ART line. And there's an initial, like, okay, wow, I got to transfer all this stuff over. And then you got to look at the patient's condition. And a lot of times you got a nurse that, you know, they're stressed out. They want to get them out. Or the physicians want to get them on the road so they can get to a tertiary care center. And so what we did is we looked at that and we said, all right, so if most of the stress on a critical care call is within like the first 20 minutes, how can we train to prepare them for that? And so what we do is, like we talked about last time, we make our training room look like a hospital room. And we set up Levofed, Vanco, fentanyl. We get the hospital IV pumps. We set those up. We have the hospital vent tubing set up. We set all of it up so that we can take out that variable when they start doing that training. So when they walk into a ICU and they see they have Levofed, Vanco, fentanyl, saline, propofol, they look at that and they go, okay, the Levofed I have to continue, The vinca I can DC until transport. The fentanyl I can bolus. The saline I can DC till transport. The propofol I'm going to continue. And they can take those five drips and take them down to two. And that way there's less confusion. They get on the road. But, you know, you think about, you know, imagine you were training on the Kendrick device for the National Registry and you're, you know, EMT basic and you're getting ready to do the National Registry and you walk in and there's a hair traction splint and it's not the one you've been practicing with. There is a certain amount of stress to unfamiliarity and we try to take that out of the picture. And so because of that stress, you might say, you might forget to say, I have my gloves or BSI precautions. You might make really simple mistakes just because you threw in a variable. And, you know, generally in EMS, we're good at dealing with variables, but if you can take out that mystery and you can add in very realistic simulations, we found that it helps dramatically with our not only our on-scene times, but our management of these high acuity calls.
Very cool. Thank you, Tyler, for sharing that. I guess one of the questions I have, and maybe we'll wait to have the answer after the break, is one, how long did it take you to do your certification and accreditation for the advanced tests that you took? And were there any surprises that came from it, things that you didn't anticipate when you went into it? And I know you said there's a 20% pass rate, so there's some anxiety around that already. But after our break, let's maybe chat through a little bit further on some of those things. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin. We'll continue right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Joe Cavelli. For nearly 10 years, I used the LADtech scheduling tool for my EMT shifts. Having had this personal experience, I'd like to share how easy it was to submit my work availability to management and be assigned shifts. It was also easy to pick up open shifts or trade with others. I could even view my work schedule for the month, week, or day and know who else I was working with well ahead of that first 911 call. Best of all, I could access my schedule and all the great features offered by LADtech right on my smartphone, tablet, or computer. Are you using the grease board or paper handouts yet for your work schedules? If so, that is a thing of the past. You'll discover too that LADtech is more than just a scheduling tool. It offers many other great features as well. To learn more about LADtech's features or to sign up for a free trial version, visit LADtech.com. That's LADtech.com. Online employee scheduling and workforce management is much easier, faster, and better with LADtech.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli with Dan Williams. We're chatting with Tyler Cristofoli and Sam Ireland. Both are with LifeStar EMS in West Bend. We're chatting about the critical care paramedic training. So Tyler and Sam, I know you had interest. You dug into it like anyone would when they want to look to advance their training and skill. You found a great resource. You took the test. How long did it take you to not only prepare for the test, but to take the test? And I guess on the flip side, what's something that maybe you didn't anticipate when you went through the process and can look back now at it?
I think that I studied for about six months or so. The secret to actually studying for the exam is just to schedule the exam so you don't put it off. I think that
absolutely.
Tyler and I can both tell you that. It was our goal for a while after we heard about the exam, and then actually setting aside the time to study for it was a whole nother ordeal. But once actually Tyler scheduled his exam before me, so then I was like, oh, man, Tyler actually scheduled it, so now I have to schedule mine. So we took it a couple weeks apart, but actually having that deadline makes you study for it. So I would say that the hardest part is scheduling it and committing and saying that by this date I'm going to be ready for it. But I think that I had a date in mind, and then I would say about five or 6 months probably of studying for it.
Yeah, I agree with Sam. Scheduling it, because we had been talking about it for, what, over a year? And
yeah,
we're like,
probably.
Yeah, FlightBridge Ed, we ordered the book from FlightBridge Ed, which is a service or a company that tries to prepare people for these advanced certifications. And, you know, we started listening to that. We tried a study group a couple times, and that
didn't really work.
No, it didn't work at all because, I don't know, I guess I study better by myself, and I think Sam does the same thing. You know, but what we did is some of the online course videos that you can do. So Will Wingfield with the ASAT, Anthony Baca has a really good course. And I think that's where I really started taking in that information, because the way you prepare for this is, I mean, we just ordered a book, and it's not really a book explaining the content. It's just a bunch of questions, and they're questions styled after the FPC test. So, yeah, you can answer a question, you know, okay, so you gave 1 unit of RBCs to a patient. What would you expect their hemoglobin and hematocrit to be? And then you got to go find out the answer, where the videos were actually, I think, more beneficial. Would you agree, Sam?
Yeah, you kind of got it from two ends. I mean, with the videos, you can kind of sit back and just kind of absorb the information. And the way that the people present it in the videos, you just pick out different things about it. It's different than sitting there and just doing a, you know, a test quiz book for an hour or 2 hours at a time.
Very cool. Dan, I know you're listening in on this. Is there anything that comes to mind?
No, the guys have done a really good job of explaining it, and I can't think of anything else that they didn't touch on.
Okay.
And well, you know what? It's funny, Joe. I took the test before Sam, right? So I got, the big prize you get is you get a patch and a little pin that's got wings on it, right? And so I got mine in the mail. You get your patch, you get your little wings and your certification. So then Sam took his, and they ran out of the paper that they print the certification on. And then they forgot to send him his wings, and then they forgot to send him the patch as well.
So he's here, I'm all jealous of Tyler's patch and pin that he got, because he got it like a week after he took the certification. Mine didn't come forever.
Have you got yours yet?
I've been waiting about 2 months.
Wow. Well, congratulations on what you did there, especially with seeking it out and preparing and taking the test. I mean, you can tell that this is a culture-driven thing too, where you're moving the football down the field at LifeStar EMS by creating the culture of training and invigorating others to look at their options and to do the same thing. So congratulations, Tyler and Sam, on your accomplishment and what you've done, and for your willingness to share it with others through this program and others.
Absolutely. And I got to give a shout out to Bradley Gotch from Flight for Life, because he is getting ready to take his FPC test. He won't tell us when it is, but he's getting ready to take it. He's messaging me right now on Facebook.
Oh, very cool.
So good luck, man.
Thanks for being on the program. How can somebody reach you if they do have questions about what you went through with your training and preparation and taking the test?
So if they have any questions at all, they can email me at my LifeStar email address. My email address for LifeStar is S, as in Sam, Ireland, like the country, IRELAND, and that's at LifeStar-EMS.com. And I'd be glad to talk to anybody who has any questions about the certification and how to prepare for it and kind of what to expect when they actually take the certification.
All right, very good. Tyler and Sam, thank you very much for being on the program today. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much for having us, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Thanks for sharing your information. That was very cool. It's great to hear you can hear the inspiration and the motivation in their voice to do those kinds of things, Dan. And I think it's exciting to share that with others. And for those that maybe hadn't heard about this opportunity, it's something to seek out. I mean, we are an industry that is really beholden to advancing care and transport, and with that comes education.
Yeah, there's so many things out there that people can get interested in and specialties that they can go to. You know, EMS is not just a dead end where you get to be a paramedic and then you're done learning and or practicing. There's just so many other things that you can do. The community paramedic, which we are still working on and trying to get that squared away, but there's just a lot of opportunities out there, and we just have to have people keep trying to reach for the stars.
That's right, Dan. I remember we did a webcast back a few months ago, and it was on compliance. And if I'm not mistaken, it was HIPAA compliance and more of the legal type stuff. And I know through doing the podcast that you had several contacts from others asking where you did get your training, What was the training? How much did it cost? Things like that. But you're right. We can never get enough of it. So.
Nope. There's lots of things to do.
And I think our program is close to ending here, but I wanted to bring Patrick Ryan into the podcast. Patrick was on a call earlier with MTM. And Patrick, welcome to the program. I know you said you'd call in if time permitted, and we didn't run out of time here on this show. Do you have an update for us?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Slow progress, I guess that's about it. I know a number of our members are engaging in conversations with MTM to try to rectify some of the issues that we see on a billing on the billing side. It's very frustrating because the change is slow. I think a conversation is better than no conversation, so that's a move forward, but nothing's changed to this point. We're trying to work through establishing a mechanism so that when transports are denied for relatively minor issues that just need to be ironed out to be able to get approval, that's one of the key things that we're trying to do. Secondly, I think it's about time. I've had a conversation with DHS regarding just the frustrations in general, but I'm pushing now to have at least a three-way call with representatives from MTM, PAW, and the state so that we can at least establish what things the state is willing to help us on and what things that they say are just our responsibility to work out. In previous conversations with Sean Thomas, some things were kind of termed as, well, those are contractual issues, and I kind of took that to mean that the state essentially wasn't going to step into some of those issues. So I guess we just need to know where we stand. You know, we're getting a little bit of cooperation from MTM, but it's still very, very slow. Nothing's changing to this point. So we'll keep pushing on, and I'd encourage anybody, any other our other members, their other listeners that are working with MTM to try to, you know, establish that conversation so at least that they can, they're hearing the frustrations that we have. And I think we also maybe need to try to work a little bit further cooperatively as providers to just iron out some of the issues individually. I think that'll help the system, you know, and sharing best practices and those types of things going forward, because I think from some people's perspective, things are going okay, others not so much. But the bottom line is there's still many issues with us trying to get paid for transports that we provide in good faith and are left holding the bag. So just got to keep moving.
Okay, Patrick, thank you very much for the update on that and for the work that you and others are doing to try and advance this and move it forward. Unfortunately, it does hit the bottom line financially for a lot of ambulance services, and they need to stay in business, and the only way you do that is to make sure that you get paid on the transportations you do. And that's really all that the organization and others are asking MTM and the state to at least honor. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Dan and Patrick, is there anything else before we wrap up today's live podcast?
Nothing other than looking forward to PSOW next month.
Yeah. Let's get a crowd there. So, and I think, Patrick, we'll talk about the MTM issue during our Hot Topics session on Thursday afternoon. Just again to make sure everybody knows what's going on, and see if we can get any other stories of people having issues, so that, like you said, I think the more pressure we can put on them than I hear from vendors who are not satisfied with the service that they're getting, that would be a good thing.
That'd be great.
Well, Dan and Patrick, thank you very much for being on the program today. The next EMS Live program is Tuesday, September 13, starting at 9. We don't have a guest lined up yet, but if you do have a topic recommendation, please get in touch with us. The email address is emslive@paw.us. EMS Live is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. We thank you very much for joining us today. Today's program was recorded and will be available for playback shortly from the PAW website. Thanks for being with us. Have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy,